This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on Live Bet Sunday, I'm Scott Satterberg with you on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. As we turn our attention to Monday and we get you ready for game number 5 of the NBA Finals, the series shifting back to Oklahoma City where the Thunder are 9.5-point favorites over the Pacers, series tied at 2 games apiece. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line is our very own Zachary Cohen. You read his excellent work at VSiN.com. Zach, thanks so much for giving us a couple of minutes tonight, and let's talk about this spread. When you see the Thunder as 9.5-point favorites in game number 5, they were 10-point favorites in game number 1. Obviously, after the loss, get juiced up to 11.5-point favorites in game number 2. 9.5 here for game number 5. What's your reaction on the spread?
I think it's too many points. I've kind of been stubborn about these big point spreads all throughout these playoffs. I know that the spot kind of screams Oklahoma City, but given what we've seen over the last 2 games, I just think that Indiana's not being respected enough for what they've done on both ends of the floor. I think this has been the better team for 2 games in a row now. I know that they let that one get away in game 4, but 3 of 16 shooting from 3 for the Thunder in that game. I think that's a really difficult way to win when you're not just, not shooting threes. It's one thing if you're not making them, but not taking them is really dangerous. And I do think Indiana is doing a really good job of running them off the line. And I know that, we saw some really good stuff from Lou Dort individually at the end of that game defensively. But I kind of think that if they put him on the ball the way that they did in those final 5 minutes, they're going to figure out a way to kind of break that pressure. Rick Carlisle is just too good of a coach. I think that throughout this series, we've seen that he's been the better coach than Dagnall, and I do think that with 2 full days of preparation, I think Indiana's going to have something for him.
You mentioned that not shooting threes thing. That's something that I was kind of interested in when I was watching the game. I'm watching Shea, and I understand the mid-range jumper is like he's elite, right? When he pulls up from the elbow or from the free throw line extended and he shoots, and it's like, great, that's awesome, and he makes those shots. But then Indy would come down and hit a corner three. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is basketball in 2025. The 3 is much better than the 2. And so I was like, how can OKC sustain this if this is what they're going to trade every possession? And, thankfully, from their perspective, it came through in the end, and they wind up covering thanks to some free throws and some questionable before the inbound play whistles. But do you think that they can continue playing this style? Or, as you mentioned, do you think they need to shoot more threes?
I think they need to take more threes. I think they will take more threes in game 5. I just think, being at home will kind of empower some of the role players to take, some shots they weren't taking in game 4. Having said that, I wrote it at VSiN.com. I don't know who those role players even are going to be. We do not know who the Thunder are playing in these games anymore. It does look like Dagnall is down to playing, 5 to 7 guys. And it does seem like Chet Holmgren is one of them, but he's been banged up. I mean, he rolled his ankle 13 times in game 4. And I think that they are going to have to play, Hartenstein a little bit more in game 5. I just don't know which of those wings and perimeter players are going to be out on the floor for the Thunder in this must-win game 5. So I don't really know where the 3-point production is going to come from. I think SGA is going to have to take some more. I think Williams is going to have to take some more. But I do think if the Pacers shoot it better than they did in game 4 when they shot 30% from 3, they are going to be in trouble. I just think 9.5 points is a ton. Maybe, Indiana doesn't win this game. Maybe they do. I do think that, asking the Thunder to beat this team by double digits, given everything we've seen so far, I just kind of think you have to throw away what we saw in the regular season a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. That was the one thing that I tweeted out. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at Scott's On Air. You follow Zach at Betting On X. I said, if this one thing the NBA Finals has taught us, that the regular season means absolutely nothing. Literally. The regular season means nothing. The ratings of both these teams mean absolutely nothing from the regular season. That's been proven here in these NBA Finals. So it's hard to pinpoint, in your opinion, somebody that we're going to look to attack from a three-pointer perspective, but we do expect the Thunder to maybe shoot some more. So if there is a player that you want to jump on, whether it's, a Williams or a Dort over 1.5, that could be something to keep an eye on. But what other props are you focused on here for game number 5? Is there anything that you saw in game number 4 that maybe opened your eyes a bit to a certain player or a certain prop?
Yeah, I saw plus money odds on Hartenstein to have over 8.5 rebounds and assists, which he has done in 2 of the last 3 games. Like I said, Holmgren's a little bit banged up right now. I don't think it's going to keep him from playing, close to 30 minutes, but I do think if Hartenstein's playing better than Holmgren, they're not going to hesitate to make that switch. Hartenstein has given them a nice edge on the glass. He did have 6 rebounds, three assists last game. I just think that they trust what he brings to the team in terms of crashing the offensive glass, running a little bit of offense, which they desperately need. They can't just put the ball in Shea's hands and expect him to do everything. Having Hartenstein out there as a little bit of an outlet definitely helps them. So over 8.5 seems like a really realistic number. It's something that he hit, I believe, 91% of the time when over 8.5 rebounds and assists during the regular season. Just a very low mark for a player that has had some lows in these playoffs, but I do think he has carved out his role in this finals.
I think they like him also from a screening game, you know, and we saw that Indy is just utilizing this full court press, and maybe to have Hartenstein just have that body run up in front of SGA just to create some space, because I think the Thunder, and credit to Indy, the Thunder are having a difficult job bringing the ball up the floor and getting into their offense, where, you know, as Indy is certainly running it up at their pace. From a Pacers perspective, who are you looking to attack here in game number 5? What do we expect the Pacers to do here?
I haven't seen the number, actually. I would be looking at Obi Toppin over points, though, just because I do think there are now stats that prove that they're playing their best basketball with Obi at the 5 right now. And Miles Turner has not had a great finals.
10.5,
Zach. I think we're going to see more looks with Obi.
What did you say? 10.5.
Yeah, I think that that's worth a look. I think we're going to see Obi play 25 minutes in this game. I just think that he has shown that he can, you know, create a lot of offense for himself. He can knock down open threes. Sure, he's maybe not the type of player that's going to play as well in Oklahoma City as he did in Indiana, but I do think if the opportunity's there, he's going to be able to kind of cash in on some good looks.
Talking to our very own Zachary Cohn. You check his stuff out at vsin.com. Excellent write-ups when it comes to these NBA Finals game, and had a great run in the VSIN Killer Sports NBA Challenge up there on vsin.com. I'm Scott Seidenberg. It is Live Bet Sunday here on VSIN. So if we look at this series now and we look at the game, we obviously, you know, you think there's too many points, so you like the Pacers with the points. Based on the potential results, where do you think the market goes for game number 6? So if the Thunder win, where do you think the market goes for the spread? If the Pacers win, where do you think the market goes for the spread? And then which angle would you rather attack?
Yeah, I think if the Pacers win, we're going to see like +7.5 in game six, which is going to be the biggest point spread that we'll see in the entire series, because I do think we'll see, you know, the zigzag in play in that game. So I would definitely be interested in Indiana in that scenario, just because I've kind of been going against the zigzag throughout these playoffs. I think there's been spots where obviously it's been successful, but also spots where having the points with the team that's evenly matched is just the right thing to do. So I think that that's where it will be, but I don't know. I will say, like, I do think the under is worth a look in this game. I only played the Pacers so far, but I do think that in game 5, under 224 looks really good to me, with, you know, 3 of the last 4 in this series going under the total pretty easily. And I do think that when you see the pace of play, it's just been so slow. I mean, these teams are at 98.83 possessions per 48 minutes, which would have been like 20th in the league during the regular season. So the Thunder have definitely successfully slowed the Pacers down a little bit. And I do think that with, you know, the Thunder not shooting a lot of threes, the value is on the under in these games. And I do think we're probably going to see it tick up a little bit before tip off too.
Pacers were held to 20 points in the first quarter in game number 1, held to 20 points in the first quarter of game number 2, held to 20 points in the first quarter of game number 3, and then the explosion in game number 4. Does it revert back to where we saw earlier in this series, and do we like the Thunder to come out strong in the first quarter?
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere in between. Like, I don't think it'll be terrible, and I don't think it'll be an explosion. Indiana was also awful in the fourth quarter for what felt like the first time this entire postseason last game. And I'm interested to see how that looks moving forward, because they have had so much success in crunch time throughout these playoffs, and they deserve a lot of credit, you know, for the way that they have, you know, executed their offense, kind of ramped things up defensively in the final 5 minutes. But also, a lot of people were saying it was a little bit lucky what they have been doing throughout the postseason with some of those, you know, 20 point comebacks in final 3 minutes or so. So I am interested in seeing what that battle looks like when the game is close late.
I'm going to give you a bet, Zach. I love it. And there's multiple ways that I think we win this. Bet the Pacers +2 in the fourth quarter. Right now, you can bet it before the game. Now, you have multiple ways to win this. They could be trailing in the fourth quarter, and we've seen their ability to certainly come back in these games. Or they could be winning in the fourth quarter, and then, you know, they somehow pull away, and they pull out to a victory. I just think there's multiple ways for the Pacers, who have Game number four was the first time they lost the fourth quarter. They've been dominant in the fourth quarter in this series. And I think even if, like, the Thunder could be winning big and maybe they just put the bench players in, like we saw earlier in this series, and then the Pacers have a better fourth quarter. I like betting the Pacers in the fourth quarter prior to the game.
I like that idea. I might join you on that. I do think that Indiana is going to bounce back in the fourth quarter, and I agree with you also. If it is a scenario where Oklahoma City's up 30 and it's the bench teams out there, I kind of trust the Pacers bench, you know, end of bench guys, to make the game a little bit closer more than I do the Thunder. So I definitely like that angle.
Yeah, that's one that I've certainly – it didn't work out in game number four, but something that I was exploring there looking at this series as a whole. All right, Zach, when does this series end? Game six or game seven? I'm not asking you to pick a winner. Is it six or seven?
I think we're going to see seven, and I do really think that there's value on the Pacers to win the series. Like, I just think it's crazy that they're out there at plus 525 right now, given what we've seen the last two games. I know Oklahoma City, the power rating is much stronger. I know that they're 9.5-point favorites in this game and have two home games left. I just don't really care. I feel like this Pacers team, they execute at such a high level. They're so well coached, and there's kind of a magic to them that I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, win this game and they somehow have a chance to close it out at home.
And if they lose this game, imagine the price you're going to get on them to win the series. Because we're talking about winning at home, which you can easily see happen. You can easily see them win at home in game six. And then in game seven, it's anybody's game. So if you like it, maybe wait a little bit. See what you can get on that throughout the course of the game here on Monday night. Zach, appreciate the time and the insight. Continue the great work, and we'll be reading at vsin.com.
Thank you.
There he is, our very own Zachary Cohn. Again, check out his great work at vsin.com. I'm Scott Satterberg. This is Live Bet Sunday here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Live Bet Sunday, I'm Scott Satterberg with you on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Always on Twitter at Scott's On Air. Hit us all up on the network at VSIN Live. My thanks to Zachary Cohn, who joined us last segment. Talk a little NBA Finals, game number five coming up here on Monday night. And for more information or betting analysis, you can head to vsin.com. Zachary Cohn's got great write-ups here on the NBA Finals and more. And one of the angles that I'm going to take a look at, and it's something that I've been on pretty much this entire postseason, and I'm going to continue to be on it, is the Thunder early in this game. I like the Thunder in the first quarter. I like the Thunder in the first half. At home in this postseason, the Thunder have been dominant early in these games, outscoring their opponents on average in the first quarter 28-21. Outscoring their opponents in the second quarter on average 33-25. They are dominating the first halves of these games. And then just in this series against the Pacers, in the two home games, in games one and game two, outscoring the Pacers 27-20 in the first quarter, outscoring them 30-23 in the second quarter. A massive first half edge for the Oklahoma City Thunder at home in these playoffs. And yes, in this series against the Pacers. The first quarter in game number four was the first time that the Pacers actually had an offense in the first quarter. And that's because they couldn't miss a three, which was crazy that I was live tweeting, watching the game, and I'm thinking, I can't believe that the Thunder are only down one at the end of the first quarter because Indy shot lights out. I don't think that carries over here on the road. And I think we see Indy revert back to the low scoring first quarters that we saw early on in this series. 20 points in the first quarter in game number one, outscored 29-20 in the first quarter of game number one. Game number two, outscored 26-20 in the first quarter. And then in game number three, when the series shifted to Indy, 32-24 dominated in the first quarter. Now they dominated the second quarter, but still, first quarters, it was until game number four they finally had a breakout again because they were lights out from three. I think it goes back and it reverts back to what we saw. I like Oklahoma City early in the first quarter. They're -3.5. They're -5.5 for the first half. That's the bet for me. Oklahoma City -5.5 in the first half. And I do like the angle of betting the Pacers, though, in the fourth quarter before the game. Because right now, pregame, you can get the Pacers at +2 in the fourth quarter. And if you look at the fourth quarters in these games, Pacers have done a much better job than Oklahoma City. I mean, the Thunder in the last game, they did a much better job in the fourth quarter, and they win. They got some favorable calls. They hit some free throws. Pacers missed some free throws. And the Thunder steal a victory, much like the Pacers have done to teams this entire postseason. So I think that, like, I believe game four was kind of an outlier when it comes to the first quarter numbers. I think it's the same thing in the fourth quarter numbers as well. And there's multiple ways you can win this. You can win it with Indy just being the most clutch team. As we know, they are the most clutch team, the best clutch team. They were in the regular season. They've been in the playoffs. More clutch minutes. If it's 5 minutes left in the game and it's close, I trust Indy more than I trust OKC. And then when it comes down to what if it's a blowout, well, then Oklahoma City has the scrubs in and the backups are in for both of these teams, and then Indy can pull a comeback like they've done multiple times here in this postseason. They don't even have to win the game just to have a strong fourth quarter. So I think multiple ways for you to win the fourth quarter bets if you do Pacers fourth quarter prior to the game beginning. In fact, I'm curious. We can have some fun here with a little same game parlay. Let's see what this pays out. We'll have some fun. I want to see, will they let me do the quarters? All right. If I do Thunder first quarter, okay, and then Pacers fourth quarter, those two legs are +300. Wow. That's pretty cool. Now, if we combine that with, like, Thunder, let's do Thunder first half. We already like the Thunder first half. What does that jack this thing up to? No. Oh. No, that's the +300. So it's Thunder first quarter, Thunder first half, and then Pacers fourth quarter, +300. All right. I thought we'd get something, like, really spicy, but I guess not, because it kind of is correlated. The first quarter and the first half, for sure, is correlated with Oklahoma City. I thought maybe an anti-correlation with Indy in the fourth quarter might do something, but apparently not. Still, +300 is nice. But I think that those are bets to be made. My best bet would be on the Thunder in the first half, -5.5. And then just a second bet that I like is really going with the Pacers in the fourth quarter. I'd also take a look from a prop perspective. I am going under on Tyrese Haliburton points and assists, because I think that we're going to see a limited number of points. The numbers dropped down, though. It was 18.5 in game number four, which was way too high. He scored 18, but he still goes under. Now it's back down to 17.5. Do I want to go under the 17.5? I'd rather give myself a little bit of leeway here and do a under points plus assists for Tyrese Haliburton. So in case he does have 18 points, and maybe he doesn't get the assist numbers to rack up the combo stat there. So that's the way that I'm going to play the under on Tyrese Haliburton. We'll repeat the best bets coming up a little bit later on. Make sure you're all locked in for game number 5 of the NBA Finals. I'm Scott Satterberg. You can always hit me up on Twitter at ScottsOnAir, ScottsOnAir. If you want to know where the real money is going, well, unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbooks, giving you the insight into where the sharp action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from pro bettors, while DraftKings provides a broader market perspective. That means you're getting the real action, not just the public money, but the kind of wagers that move lines. You can see the percentage of bets versus percentage of handle on every game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. Get VSiN's exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. We have a final in Omaha, the men's College World Series in progress right now. Coastal Carolina with a 6-2 victory over Oregon State. So they improved to 2-0. And taking a look at the updated futures market, they are the second favorite behind LSU. Coastal Carolina at plus 195, second favorite to win the national championship. LSU is your first favorite at plus 120. LSU will play their second game coming up here on Monday against UCLA. And LSU right now is a heavy favorite in that game, minus 300 over UCLA. The run line, -2.5, minus 110, -2.5 for LSU over UCLA. LSU defeated Arkansas, a little upset there. Although, they're the two top teams. And before the tournament started, they were the number one and number two favorites to win the national championship. Arkansas still is actually the third favorite, despite the fact that they're 0-1, but they are minus 500 favorites for their elimination game coming up here on Monday against the Cinderella story of Murray State. And by my goodness, what a storyline it would be if Murray State eliminates Arkansas. College World Series action. That game coming up at 2 o'clock Eastern time here on Monday. So we have two games here on Monday. The elimination game between Murray State and Arkansas, where Arkansas is a minus 500 favorite. Run line is 3.5 runs. Arkansas -3.5, minus 135. And then UCLA and LSU, the second winner's game. Both those teams are 1-0. LSU, as I mentioned, minus 300 favorites. And your run line there is -2.5. Coming up on Tuesday, there will be an elimination game between Louisville and Oregon State. So Louisville, as they got a win here over Arizona to avoid elimination, now they will take on Oregon State in another elimination game after Oregon State loses to Coastal Carolina. And we do have the odds on that game for Tuesday, and it is Oregon State minus 200. So Oregon State minus 200. And then we will wait to see what the next elimination game is going to be on Tuesday, because that will be the winner of, I believe it is, no, so it'll be Oregon State loses, should be the loser of the UCLA-LSU game. We'll be playing in one of those games on Wednesday. Coastal will take on the winner of LSU and UCLA. Curious to see who that is and what the market is, because if it's LSU, LSU is going to be favored, and I think Coastal might be the play. Nation's longest winning streak, 55-11 on the year. Coastal Carolina, sneaky play here if they are dogs, if it is LSU, in fact, in that game coming up on Wednesday. Don't forget, you can download a free College World Series betting guide right now at vsin.com/CWS. Again, vsin.com/CWS. From college baseball to Major League Baseball, the trade that shocked the world, some would say. We'll recap that, plus take a look at the Monday slate of games next. I'm Scott Seidenberg. This is Live Bet Sunday here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Live Bet Sunday, I'm Scott Seidenberg. You're on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Always on Twitter, at Scott's On Air. Michael tweeting at me, Omaha and LSU can't meet until the finals. Well, love to see that happen, man. Coastal is so good. 25 straight wins for Coastal Carolina here as they get a victory in Omaha. College World Series action. Again, for more information, go to vsin.com/CWS. Get a free College World Series betting guide right now available up on the website. Thanks for the tweet there, Michael. Continue to send your tweets in at Scott's On Air. Hit us all up on the network at VSiN Live as we transition from college baseball to Major League Baseball. As the big trade that came down right before Sunday Night Baseball began, the Boston Red Sox trading Rafael Devers to the San Francisco Giants for a couple of pitchers in Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks, as well as a couple of prospects, in a trade that a lot of people around baseball, just reading Twitter, seem to be baffled by. I'll be honest, I'm confused as well. After thinking about it over the course of this program, I've determined, and I tweeted this out, that this has to be, at least this is my opinion, it has to be step one. This has to be a move that's a precursor to another move. You don't just free up money because you want to save money, not when you're the Boston Red Sox. And I understand that their ownership's got some other things going on, right? They got, you know, they Liverpool, and they're spending money on players left and right over there. 100 million here, 150 million there. I just think that you free up money because there's another move coming. What is that other move? I don't know yet. I think, at least, I feel like the Red Sox are going to go out there and get a first baseman. And the guy that I floated the idea out there is Josh Naylor. The Arizona Diamondbacks are, I don't want to call it in a free fall, but they're not going anywhere this year. The Diamondbacks are a fading team. I've already been on the whole fade the Diamondbacks train, go under their adjusted win total, fade them every which way, because with the injuries that they're dealing with and with the poor level of play, the poor pitching, the bad bullpen, this is a team that's not going to go anywhere this year. They have a good young core. They're going to be better in the future. But especially once the Corbin Burns injury came down, I just felt that this was a team that their season is done. And so, with a couple of players on their roster that are going to be free agents, I think they could wind up being sellers as we progress throughout the month of July. Or, the June and July, as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline. And closer to the All-Star break. Guys that I think could be on the move. Gino Suarez. Slugger. Could be on the move. A lot of teams would want a Gino Suarez. And Josh Naylor, their first baseman, could be on the move as well. I think both are good fits for the Red Sox. Gino could be a DH. I don't, because not only he's going to play first. He's a third baseman. You don't need a third baseman. You got Bregman. That's how you got into this whole situation anyway with Devers. But Naylor's a first baseman that's out there. Got a tweet earlier from Adam who said Rhys Hoskins from the Brewers. Another first baseman, although I'd rather have Naylor, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and he's younger, as opposed to Hoskins, who's older and still has another year left on his deal. But I do think that there are players out there that the Red Sox will be looking to acquire. I do not think that this move to trade Rafael Devers is just to give more at-bats to the young kids. I think this is a move that is a precursor to another move. Now, the other aspect of this is that everyone saw it coming. Are you shocked because the trade happened, or are you shocked because of the return? And I think that's the angle that people are surprised by, is that you get back Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks and a couple of prospects. No. That's not a good enough return. But the idea of trading Rafael Devers is not a shocker, because ever since the Red Sox acquired Alex Bregman and Devers refused to switch positions, didn't certainly like the idea of becoming a full-time designated hitter, had complained for a while, got off to a terrible start to his season, credit him for surging after the first month of the season or so, or midway through the first month of the season, because he was really bad to begin the year. And then he surged. He had a home run today against the Yankees, helped the Red Sox win 2-0 over the Yankees, finished a 3-game sweep. Things seemed to be getting better, but maybe behind the scenes, they weren't. Maybe Devers was, and I'm speculating here, so don't quote me, but maybe he was bothered by, Bregman being out and him not playing third. And Alex Cora saying, we want to continue to have you be the DH. There could be something there. I don't know. Maybe this was addition by subtraction for the Boston Red Sox. I tend to believe, though, that this is a precursor, as I mentioned, to another move that's coming. What that move is, I don't know. But I do think it's a good time to buy in on the Boston Red Sox. The market is about to be very down on them. Trading away your best hitter, the market is going to be sour on the Boston Red Sox. You might be able to find some good long shot prices on Boston to wherever you want to bet them, to make the playoffs or to advance to the league championship series or just go over their adjusted in-season win total. I think this is a good time to buy in on the Red Sox. First off, they've won 5 straight games. They just swept the Yankees. But the market will certainly be down on them because of trading away Rafael Devers. I think this is a good time to buy in on the Sox because, as I mentioned, I feel another move is coming, a move that will make the Red Sox better. And once they do make that move, whatever it is, then there won't be a buy time on the Red Sox. Now is the time you buy any dip that happens here on Boston. Now, speaking of buying on Boston, tomorrow is a spot where I want to sell on Boston. It's a fade spot for me. Coming off, as I mentioned, the sweep of the Yankees, holding them to only 4 runs. First time that's happened in Fenway in like 100 years. Literally, there was a crazy stat they gave out on the YES Network. It was like the last time the Yankees scored only 4 runs in a 3-game series at Fenway Park, it was like 1916. And the final game of that series, they lost 1-0 to a pitcher by the name of Babe Ruth. Literally. So Yankees only scored 4 runs in 3 games at Fenway. Not good. And it didn't help that Aaron Judge had a terrible series. He did have that tying home run against Garrett Crochet. Only counted for 1 run, though. 1 of the 4 runs the Yankees scored in 3 games as they got swept. So the Red Sox are riding this high right now. Or they were, at least, riding this high of beating the Yankees in 3 games, having an incredible weekend at Fenway, 5 straight wins, climbing up the standings, feeling good about themselves. Only to board a plane to go to Seattle, a cross-country trip to take on the Mariners, who are also playing just tremendous baseball right now. Seattle's a really good team. And then you find out, well, Rafael Devers has to get pulled from the plane. So before takeoff, you say, hey, Rafi, need you off the flight here. Go take this cab back to Fenway and get your stuff because you've been traded to San Francisco. By the way, you couldn't just like stay on the plane, fly to like Seattle and then go from Seattle to San Francisco. He had to get off the plane, I guess, whatever. So he gets off the team charter, goes back to Fenway, and now the players are flying across country thinking to themselves, what are we? Who are we? What just happened? We're playing good baseball right now. Vibes are high. Our best hitter's gone. The guy that just homered today to help us beat the Yankees? We just traded him away? What are we getting back? Who are these guys? We need pitchers? What about our lineup? I think it's a good time to fade the Red Sox here on Monday. Fading off the emotional roller coaster that they just went through with the big weekend against the Yankees, only to find out Devers been traded. And now, even if it's not just fading the emotions of the players, how about just fading the Red Sox lineup without Rafael Devers? There is an idea. The offense is clearly weaker without Devers. And then you got to face Logan Gilbert coming off the IL, making a start here for Seattle at home, where the Mariners have been playing really good baseball, coming off a 3-game sweep of the Guardians. 6-0 in a game where they only had to use 2 relief pitchers because Emerson Hancock went 7 scoreless innings. Mariners are the play here on Monday, fading the Boston Red Sox. Hey, if you want to bet smarter this football season, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now, get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 25-26 NFL betting guide dropping July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. Use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Promo code BOOK. Coming up next, we'll talk about the rest of the Major League Baseball schedule here for Monday and best bets for NBA Finals game number 5. I'm Scott Seidenberg. This is Live Bet Sunday on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Scott Satterberg back here with you. Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. As we got a little breaking news right now in Major League Baseball. Yeah, we had the Rafael Devers trade earlier, but earlier this evening on Sunday Night Baseball, the Dodgers were playing the Giants. Dodgers win 5-4, and Dave Roberts was talking to reporters and had mentioned that Shohei Ohtani was going to perhaps pitch a another simulated game this week, and then return to the rotation and pitch for the Dodgers as soon as this week. Well, the breaking news now, the Dodgers have announced that Shohei Ohtani is pitching tomorrow. Not a simulated game, but against the Padres. That's right. Dodgers take on the Padres tomorrow night at Dodger Stadium. It was Ben Kasperius as the scheduled starter with the Dodgers at minus 150 favorites. But now the breaking news is that Shohei Ohtani returns to the mound tomorrow night against the Padres. Now, this is the situation. We don't know how long he's going to go. We have not had the luxury of seeing Ohtani pitch in a rehab start because with a guy like Shohei Ohtani, he's not making rehab starts. You're not sending him down to the minors to make a rehab start, right? Instead, he's pitching simulated games during practice, and it's tough. You can't really get you can't get much out of a simulated game. You're going up against guys, you're going up against like coaches sometimes, and oftentimes they're just standing there in the box, just letting you get your work in. Plus, like the timing, it's like, how do you sit down and how long do you sit down for? Like, you don't necessarily know the flow of the game. Like, what if your team has a big offensive performance? Now you're sitting for 15, 20 minutes. Now you get back up and you go out and you pitch again. So simulated games are, you can't get much out of them. But Ohtani will be the pitcher against Dylan Cease. Dodgers minus 142 right now is what I'm seeing on FanDuel. Not sure if that has been adjusted with their current situation. DraftKings has it at minus 150. So that's what it was before, and no real change in the market price right now. And that's the thing. Do you overreact and adjust based on Ohtani pitching because of how good we expect him to be? Or are you cautious because we don't know what to expect, and we also don't know how long he's going to pitch into the game? Ohtani could, what if he only goes four innings? What if he only goes three innings? Certainly the prop markets will be very interesting to explore on Ohtani. How do you handle the prop bets? Do you go over a strikeout prop? Do you go under a strikeout prop? Outs recorded? All that stuff's going to be posted tomorrow. And that's the real question. How do you attack Ohtani not knowing how deep he's going to go into the game? And I'm curious. I don't think that Dave Roberts said anything about any pitch count or whatnot. So this was a report from earlier today. Okay. Ohtani was asked through his interpreter how close he feels to pitch in games. And this is a report coming from, Matthew Moreno on Twitter. Quote, this is from Ohtani. Quote, I think it all has to do with pitch counts. With the last live BP, I felt like the intensity was there and I felt like my stuff was game ready. So Ohtani certainly feels that it's game ready. The one hesitation that from Ohtani's mouth to the interpreter's ear, from the interpreter's mouth to the reporter, Ohtani saying that the one holdup with when he's going to be ready to pitch in a live game is the pitch count. It's not about his stuff. It's not about his arm strength. It's not about, health. It's about the pitch counts. So if Ohtani was concerned, thinking, I don't know if how many pitches I'm going to throw, so I don't know when I'm going to start because how long, I don't know how many they're going to let me throw. To me, that says that we might not see a long outing from Shohei Ohtani here on Monday. So again, breaking news, Ohtani will start for the Dodgers here Monday night against the Padres and Dylan Cease. Dodgers are a minus 150 favorite. Total is 9. But I got to go under on props because I do not think that we get a full outing from Shohei Ohtani. We get a report here from Bleacher Report on Twitter says that Ohtani is expected to go 1 to 2 innings. And again, I don't know if that's from Dave Roberts. All we know is that earlier today, Dave Roberts said that Ohtani will pitch in a game this coming week. Does that mean that Ohtani is just going to be like an opener? 1 to 2 innings and then Kasparius for the rest of the game? I will say this. The markets will catch up accordingly, which is why I think that we haven't had a change in the line, is because maybe the market knows, the books know that he's not going to pitch that long. So if they were minus 150 with Kasparius scheduled to pitch, now that it's Ohtani, it stays at minus 150. Maybe Ohtani only goes one inning or two innings as the opener. So if we see pitching props open up on Ohtani, and again, I don't know what the books are going to do with Ohtani props. I can only go under. You have to go under, especially if that report from Bleacher Report is accurate and he is only going to go 1 to 2 innings, then you have to go under if they post anything. If it's public now that he will be limited to only 1 to 2 innings, the book's not going to put anything up on him. They're not going to put up an out prop. They're not going to put up a strikeout prop. I hope they do. He is the most polarizing player in baseball. Everyone's going to want to bet Shohei Ohtani stuff. So I hope they put something up, and then we can just go under. But Ohtani, here we go. He will be the starting pitcher. His first start since 2023 for the Dodgers. So real quick, let me get to some best bets here. We're going to fade the Ohtani train. I mean, I don't want to fading, but we are going to go the under any props that they put up. If they do put up props, we're going to go under. But here's what we're going to do for the basketball game. Monday night, game number 5, Pacers and Thunder. Best bet, Thunder first quarter -5.5. The Thunder have gotten off to incredibly fast starts throughout this entire NBA playoffs, and especially in this series against the Pacers, especially at home. In this series against the Pacers, in games 1 and 2 in Oklahoma City, Thunder outscored the Pacers 27-20 in the first quarter, 30-23 in the second quarter. In all home games in this postseason for the Oklahoma City Thunder, in all home games, they're 9-2 straight up, 8-3 against the spread, outscoring their opponents 28-21 in the first quarter, 33-25 in the second quarter. Thunder -5.5 in the first half is my best bet for this game. And as a secondary bet, I like going under Tyrese Haliburton points plus assists. His points prop has been reduced. It was 18.5 in game number 4. He goes under by scoring 18 points. It has now been adjusted to go to 17.5. I don't want to play the points prop to go under. But I'd rather play the points plus assists to go under for Tyrese Haliburton. And right now you can get that number at, looks like, 25.5 points plus assists for Tyrese Haliburton. Will go under 25.5 minus 115, second best bet on this game number 5 between the Pacers and the Thunder here on Monday night. Best bet brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, VSIN, and FirstBet. Check this out. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at FirstBet, and you'll receive a $200 cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. FirstBet's going to give you a $100 deposit match, and then VSIN will complete the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value right there. So, a $500 trifecta from GBank, FirstBet, and VSIN. Go to VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion, limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer, and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. Coming up next here after Live Bet Sunday, Greg Peterson on Cashing Out. He will have his thoughts on the Rafael Devers trade from the Boston Red Sox. Are we fading? I'm going to fade the Red Sox in Seattle on Monday. Is Greg going to fade the Red Sox in Seattle on Monday? Plus, Shohei Ohtani on the mound for the first time since 2023. Get Greg's thoughts on that game coming up against the Padres. And then, VSiN by the books tomorrow morning with Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis at 7 a.m., followed by a numbers game with Gil Alexander at 10 a.m. Eastern time. All coming up next right here on VSiN. I'm Scott Seidenberg. This has been Live Bet Someday right here on the Sports Betting Network.